Hey everyone, are you ready for some seriously wild visions?
Yeah, buckle up.
We're diving into the book of Ezekiel today, and let me tell you, it's intense. We're going to be focusing on his call to become a prophet.
Oh yeah, that's a big one.
And to help us unpack all this, we're using excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Leslie Allen.
A great resource, for sure.
So, you know, when we think about prophets, we often picture these, like, larger-than-life figures.
Right, totally.
But Dr. Allen makes a really important point. Ezekiel, he wasn't just some random guy chosen out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's not like he was just walking down the street and bam, instant prophet.
Exactly. He was already a priest, which means teaching and spiritual leadership. That was kind of his jam already.
He was already deeply involved in the religious life of Israel, which really shaped his work as a prophet.
And speaking of shaping, we can't forget the context, right?
Oh, absolutely. Context is key.
He's in exile by the Kibar Canal near Nippur, east of Babylon, which, by the way, if you're picturing some little ditch.
Yeah, it's not exactly a relaxing stream.
It was actually a pretty major canal, part of this huge network that was vital for, like, everything, irrigation, transportation, you name it.
And don't forget, this region had been through a lot, conflict, devastation. So these canals were helping to revitalize the whole area.
So it's a place of exile, yeah, but also a place of, like, rebuilding and resilience.
A lot going on there.
And in the middle of all this, Bam Ezekiel has this vision. And Dr. Allen, she really emphasizes how overwhelming it is. Like, Ezekiel keeps using the word like.
Right, because normal words just can't do it justice.
It's like he's trying to describe a dream, you know, grasping for familiar images to explain something that's just otherworldly.
Totally. And those images, too. I mean, we've got a stormy wind from the north, a huge cloud blazing with light, fire flashing all over the place.
It's like a Michael Bay movie directed by God.
Exactly. And it's not just some random light show either. Dr. Allen connects this imagery back to this idea of a storm god, a powerful, awe-inspiring force.
Like in Psalm 18, where David describes God riding on a cherub and flying on the wings of the wind, you get that sense of power, of movement.
It's incredible. And then, as if that wasn't enough, things get even wilder.
Okay, hit me with it.
Enter these four living creatures, angelic beings, with human forms, wings.
Okay, I'm picturing angels. Got it.
And wait for it. Each one has four faces.
Four faces? Like what?
Human, ox, eagle, and lion. It's like God took all the best parts of creation and mashed them together.
Whoa, that's a lot to unpack. I'm sensing some serious symbolism here.
Absolutely. Dr. Allen suggests that these faces represent different facets of God's power and creation. You know, the human face could be intelligence, the ox strength, the eagle vision, and the lion courage.
So it's like Ezekiel is seeing a visual representation of God's many-sided nature.
Yes, exactly. He's seeing that God is far more than just one thing.
And it's not just a static image, right? These creatures, they're doing something.
They're not just standing around looking pretty. They're holding up this platform, which Dr. Allen says represents the firmament of heaven.
The firmament. Okay, remind me about that again.
Right. So the firmament, it's like this solid dome, this lid over the world. And you know how in Exodus, when the elders see this vision of God, there's this shimmering pavement of sapphire stone under his feet?
Yeah, I remember that.
Dr. Allen connects that scene with what Ezekiel sees here. It's like Ezekiel is getting this glimpse of heaven itself.
Whoa. But it's not just the visuals that are intense.
Right, there's the sound, too. The noise of the creature's wings, Ezekiel describes it as like mighty waters, the thunder of the Almighty, a tumult like an army.
It's like sensory overload. I can't even imagine what that must have been like.
And then through all this chaos and noise, a voice comes through the voice of God. And that's where the formal call for Ezekiel to be a prophet begins. And that voice, oh man, it cuts right through the craziness of the vision, you know, and it changes Ezekiel's life forever.
Yeah, let's talk about that call, that pivotal moment. Dr. Allen really highlights this command from God. O mortal, stand up on your feet. It's not exactly like, please, if you wouldn't mind too much.
Oh, no, no, not at all. It's more like a drill sergeant yelling, get up, get ready, time for action.
Yeah, it's a call to action, an empowering moment. And it's interesting how God addresses Ezekiel as mortal, you know, especially after that mind-blowing vision. It really emphasizes that difference between a human and the divine.
Oh, absolutely. It's like God saying, hey, remember who you are, little guy. I'm the one in charge here.
Yeah, a little dose of cosmic perspective right in the middle of all this. But so what's the mission? What's Ezekiel actually supposed to do with all this?
Okay, so he's sent to the rebellious house of Israel, those who have turned away from God. And he's not just supposed to politely suggest they get back on track either. He's giving this recognition formula, you could call it. He's supposed to tell them, they shall know that there has been a prophet among them.
Oh, wow. That's not messing around. It's like less of a friendly suggestion, more of a, like, take this seriously kind of statement.
Totally. It's underlining the authority of Ezekiel's message. It's God speaking through him, not just Ezekiel sharing his personal opinions. But you can imagine telling people they're rebellious, that's not going to win him any popularity contests.
Yeah, I don't imagine it went over too well at parties. Okay, but here's where things get really interesting. Dr. Allen talks about this moment where Ezekiel's told to eat a scroll. A scroll.
Yeah, not exactly your average snack, is it?
I'm trying to picture ancient parchment paper. Not exactly appetizing. But okay, seriously, what's the deeper meaning here?
Right, so Dr. Allen explains that eating the scroll presents Ezekiel internalizing God's message. It's not just about hearing it. It's about absorbing it, taking it in, letting it become part of him.
Like he's literally embodying the message.
Exactly. But here's where it gets even more interesting. That scroll, it's full of, you know, words of lamentations, mourning, and woe. Not exactly light reading, but it tastes sweet as honey to Ezekiel. Sweet. How do we put that together with, you know, all the doom and gloom?
Yeah, that's a head scratcher. A scroll of misery that tastes like a delicious treat. What's going on there?
It's a paradox, for sure. But that sweetness, Dr. Allen suggests, it represents Ezekiel accepting his mission, embracing the hard stuff. Even though he's got to deliver bad news, there's something fulfilling about obeying God. There's a deeper purpose there. And somehow, that's sweet.
Okay, I'm starting to see why this story has resonated with people for so long. But, you know, Dr. Allen points out something about the chronology, too, that caught my eye. The book starts with this phrase, the 30th year. And it doesn't say what that even refers to. Like, 30th year of what?
Oh, yeah, it's like a little biblical riddle. Dr. Allen thinks it probably refers to Ezekiel's age.
Okay, so he's turning 30, but why not just say that? It's a weird way to put it.
Right. And then to make things even more interesting, there's this editorial comment later on in verses 2 and 3 that gives us another timeline.
Wait, hold on. So we have two different timelines going on. Is this a contradiction?
Well, the second comment, it clarifies things a bit. It says that the vision happened on the 5th day of the month, in the 5th year of King Jehoiachin's exile. So it's giving us a more specific date. Dr. Allen thinks maybe this was added later, you know, kind of like an ancient editor's note, to help clear up any confusion about that 30th year business.
Ah, okay, so not necessarily a contradiction, but maybe two different ways of looking at time, or maybe trying to connect Ezekiel's personal journey with the bigger historical picture.
Yeah, exactly. But even with these dates and details, we got to remember Ezekiel's not operating in a vacuum, right? He's in exile by that Kibar Canal. And Dr. Allen reminds us that place, it wasn't just some random Dutch.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, how it was part of this whole network of canals, essential for everything in the region.
Right, so he's not just preaching to some detached audience. He's talking to people who are dealing with real-world challenges, political upheaval, trying to rebuild their lives. It gives a whole different dimension to his role as a prophet.
Totally. Makes it a lot more human, a lot more relatable. And speaking of humanizing, let's go back to that moment when God calls Ezekiel mortal. It's such a powerful word choice, especially after that incredible vision.
Oh, yeah. It really underlines that vast distance between humanity and God, right? Ezekiel, he's just seen these amazing angelic beings, a glimpse of heaven, and then he's reminded, hey, you're just a human.
That's like a reality check, but also this affirmation that even though he's just a mortal, God still chose him for this mission.
Exactly. And that mission, let's not forget, it's not going to be easy. Remember that recognition formula implies some serious pushback, maybe even hostility. He's basically being told, get ready for some resistance.
So how does Ezekiel react? Does he just walk into the labor camp and start shouting about doom and gloom?
Well, hold on. Before we get to that, there's another layer to this call that Dr. Allen points out. Right after eating that scroll and getting his instructions, Ezekiel's told to go back to your people. Sounds simple, but it's actually pretty complex.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. On one hand, he's this prophet, chosen by God, but he's also a member of this exile community. He's one of them.
Right, so he's got this responsibility to speak truth, but also to maintain that connection, to deliver a message of judgment, but still belong to the people he's addressing. Imagine the weight of that.
Oof, yeah, that's a heavy load. So how does he navigate that? How does he have to go back to those people? Does he just casually stroll into the labor camp, scroll in his pocket and say, hey, everyone, I've got some bad news?
Well, it's not exactly a casual stroll, Dr. Allen. She points out that Ezekiel's transported back to the labor camp, not on foot, but by the Spirit.
By the Spirit.
Yeah, it's like those stories, you know, in the Bible, like Elijah being whisked away or Philip, you know, he was miraculously transported.
Right, right.
It's like a divine express lane just drops him right back into the daily grind.
So he has this incredible vision, this, you know, spiritual high, and then bam, back to reality.
Right. It's kind of funny in a way, but I think it's also significant that, you know, this amazing spiritual experience, it doesn't make Ezekiel exempt from the mundane, the everyday challenges of life.
Right. He still has to deal with the labor camps, the political stuff, everything everyone else is going through.
Exactly. It grounds the whole story in a way, reminds us that, you know, spiritual journeys aren't separate from the material world. And Dr. Allen, she points out that those labor camps, they weren't just about punishment. They actually played a crucial role in rebuilding the region after all the devastation from the Assyrians and the Babylonians.
Oh, interesting. So Ezekiel and the other exiles, they were part of this rebuilding effort even in exile.
Exactly. It's not just judgment and prophecy. It's resilience and hope.
It makes you think about exile differently, doesn't it?
Definitely. It suggests that even in hardship, you can still find meaning, you can contribute to something bigger than yourself.
That's a powerful message. But let's go back to that vision for a second. Those four faces on the creatures, the human, the ox, the eagle, and the lion. What else can we learn from that?
Well, besides representing God's creation, those faces, they connect to ancient Near Eastern symbolism too, especially the idea of throne guardians.
Throne guardians.
Yeah, like these powerful beings, often hybrids with features from different animals. They were supposed to protect the king, uphold his authority.
Okay, so they're not just random creatures. They represent order, power, divine protection.
Exactly. And the fact that they're carrying God's throne, that emphasizes his mobility, his ability to move throughout creation and intervene in human affairs.
So it's not just about showing off. It's a statement about God's power and his involvement in the world.
Precisely, Dr. Allen. She emphasizes that this vision, it's a theophany, a visible manifestation of God. But it's not just any theophany. It's a theophany of judgment. It foreshadows the message Ezekiel has to deliver to those rebellious Israelites.
So it's a reminder that God's presence can be awe-inspiring, but also terrifying. He's both life-giving and judgment-bringing. It makes me think about that scroll again, the one with all the lamentations and mourning and well. It's a tough message to deliver, but it tastes sweet to Ezekiel.
That's the paradox at the heart of his call, that bittersweetness. It suggests that pronouncements of judgment can be rooted in love, in a desire for restoration and reconciliation.
So even in the midst of, you know, doom and gloom, there's this thread of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe sometimes the hardest truths are the ones we need the most.
And maybe there's a strange kind of sweetness in facing those truths, in aligning ourselves with God's will, even when it's hard.
That's a beautiful thought. And it brings us to the end of our deep dive into Ezekiel's vision and his call.
Wow. What a journey. From exile to angelic creatures to a scroll that tastes like honey. We covered a lot.
We did. And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with this. How does Ezekiel's experience, his vision, his call, his challenges inspire you? How does it make you think about seeking and embracing your own purpose, even when things are tough?
That's a great question. Something to ponder. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.